the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. What is your passion, and what is your purpose? Are they one in the same for you? Are you able to pursue each one as you journey through life? My guest on the podcast today has found a way to align both her passion and her purpose to bring her personal joy while creating greater good for the world. Rebecca Corey is an actress and comedian who is dedicated to her passion. While performing her critically acclaimed one-woman show, Rebecca Corey with Balls, she went on to beat thousands and become a finalist on NBC's Last Comic Standing 4. You have also seen Rebecca in very popular films and shows, such as the feature film Big Fat Liar, The Wayne Brady Show, Yes, Dear, and she was a series regular on One Big Happy, just to name a few. Along her journey as an actress, she found her purpose. And in 2013, she founded a nonprofit dog rescue organization named Stand Up for Pits Foundation to raise awareness and save the lives of pit bull type dogs through advocating, educating, and through her wildly successful live comedy events. She is dedicated to being the voice of these souls who are born inherently good, but have been unjustly vilified, abused, and needlessly killed for over three decades. It is my absolute pleasure to have this conversation with Rebecca Corey. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited that we're going to get to have this chat. I have so many questions, so many things I would like us and our listeners to think about and to ponder upon in these times when it comes to humans' best friend, as I like to call them. So let's start with you telling us, did you grow up an animal lover? Did you always love dogs and have dogs? Or is this something that came about in your adult life?
That's a good question. I'm actually directing a feature-length documentary film right now about why I do what I do. And yes, there were animals in my household growing up and stuff. And I always, always loved animals. I would say, I mean, I always felt that I loved animals more than people, to be honest. And the animals did not get treated as they should have been treated in my household. And that absolutely has everything to do with what I, you know, with why I do what I do. But yes, I absolutely have loved them from day one. Love all of them, especially dogs, but love all of them. Yes.
I love that. And you know what? It's funny. I can relate to that in that I didn't grow up with animals, but my family that had animals, it was in Latin America. My parents are Latin American, and dogs there were supposed to be like living on the terraces and watching over the house or living outside in the backyard. And even as a kid, I didn't understand that. I wanted to cuddle with them. I wanted to hold them. And that's just not something our families there did. So it wasn't until I became an adult here in LA and, you know, I grew up here, but then I realized like I would never let my dog live outside. Like, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, I know in my experience, it was just, you know, two adults who should have never had animals ever, let alone kids. So, yeah, I mean, but I loved them and, you know, always did what I could for them for sure.
I love that. No, and we are so glad that you're here. Are you kidding me? We need you and the cause needs you. So tell me, you use your platform as an actress and a comedian to bring awareness to this cause that is so near and dear to your heart. Tell us who or our listeners who may not know about your foundation, a little bit about Stand Up for Pits and what you represent. What is your mission with Stand Up for Pits Foundation?
It's a nonprofit dedicated to educating, advocating, and saving the lives of pit bull type dogs. And we do it through any way that we possibly can. There is no one way. And obviously the old way is not working because shit ain't changing the way that it should be. So I organized a march on Washington in 2014 to raise awareness about the dogfighting epidemic and breed-specific legislation, which is discrimination enshrined in law. Basically, it gives cities, counties, in states, in different states around the country, the right to ban and discriminate against dogs that they are labeling as pit bull type dogs. So we're just trying to, you know, educating is just as important as, you know, rescuing. It's you know, so much change has to be done. And so Stand Up for Pits, you know, it just represents a sort of in your face kind of non-conventional way of doing things. You know, we're really, really transparent. We are what we are. And I stand by it, you know, like it or not. And it's not always popular, some of the things that I say or do, but it is what it is. And, you know, nothing I could say or do is as offensive as what's happening to these dogs. So that's what Stand Up for Pits is about. You know, if you really want to know the truth and you want to be active, and it's about empowering people too. Like I've said this so many times, that we don't exist to serve society. We exist, Stand Up for Pits exists, and organizations in animal welfare exist to save lives. And people oftentimes treat nonprofits and rescue organizations as, you know, somewhere they could dump their dog on,
right?
Or, you know what I mean? Or fix this for us, or do this or do that. And the reality is, no, we empower people. You fix it. You do better.
Your organization should not be treated like, here, you take the problem I created and fix it because I don't have time for it anymore, which I see a lot in rescue.
So much. And it's infuriating in a lot of different ways, because it's like, you know, I didn't start the Stand Up for Pits Foundation so people could contact me and say, hey, I don't want my dog anymore because it got out, or I don't want my dog anymore because I just had a baby, or I don't want my dog. The list of reasons goes on and on, and it's so stupid. I'm existing because we need to educate, advocate, and save the lives of the dogs that are already, you know, the millions of lives who need help. That's why I exist. So, you know, I'm not always, you know, if you email the Stand Up for Pits Foundation, you know, trying to dump your dog, it's not always going to be a pleasant conversation.
Good.
It's going to be,
I think people need to hear the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what I love so much. And I have followed your foundation for years because I myself am a mama to pity dogs, and I love them so much. I love them more than I could express with words because of the unconditional love and kindness and vulnerability that they have taught me, you know?
Yeah. They're amazing. They're the best. I mean, don't even, you know, obviously, you know, I love them so much. They are incredible. So,
and tell us, for listeners who may not have gone to one of your stand-up comedy shows, what can one expect when we go to your comedy shows? And, you know, some people go, oh, well, I'm too busy to help and I can't get involved with dog rescue. But if you like to laugh and you want to go see a good show, how can people be helping in that way?
It's as simple as that. You buy a ticket. That ticket goes to the Stand Up for Pits Foundation, and you come and, you know, you watch amazing comedy and laugh. There's really zero downside, and we will help save lives with that money, or do whatever we can in whatever way we can. Educate, advocate, and save lives. Those are all as important as pulling and placing dogs. If you change the mind of one person or inspire one person, that can be impactful for many years to come. So, you know, however you can do that. And these events do that. So,
and they're national, right? You go to different cities around the United States.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to, I haven't announced it yet, but I'll announce it on here. Okay. We're going to New York on April 24th. That's our first city on the 22 tour. But we're going to be going to Denver this year and back to Washington, obviously Hollywood. We're doing, San Jose this year. We're doing Boston, Chicago. So it's going to be, you can come to any of those cities. And if you can't come to one of them, if we don't come, you know, to your city, you can always donate. Or if you don't have funds or whatever, share a dog that needs to be seen. That's one way people can help. Yeah,
absolutely. I always say on here is there's no excuse nowadays not to help. There's just too many easy and free and non-time consuming ways to give back. But I will say, if you have a chance to get to one of these shows, I mean, I went to the one on Melrose in November in Hollywood, and it was wonderful. And I invited a girlfriend of mine. We were so happy to see each other in person and get to go to an event again. It was yours. And
it was
I really loved it. There was a live auction. Yeah. And we got to, you know, you get to bid for doggy stuff and you get to help in so many other ways. I actually even bought a couple of gifts for friends for birthdays because different rescue organizations had set up booths. So I saw a lot of collaboration with you and other rescues. Yeah. And I really love that. Can you talk to us about why collaborating with other rescues is also really important for the cause?
I mean, it's something that I've been producing these events for 12 years. We're going into our 12th year. So I've been working with rescues around the country for a long, long time. And not all of them have turned out to be great. It's been extremely disappointing at times, if I'm being very honest. And, you know, I'm no longer fans of what they're doing. And I'm certain they're not fans of me, because that's the way that I feel. But I do believe at the end of the day, collaboration is important. And my organization, Stand Up for Pits, has raised thousands upon thousands of dollars to help organizations nationwide over the past 12 years, thousands of dollars. And we have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars with the shelter supplies for shelters around the country. And we have, you know, helped people grow their platforms and get followers and raise awareness about the work that they're doing. And some of them, you know, some of them I love, you know, I can't get enough of what they do, but this animal welfare is made up of human beings. And so with that is going to come different personalities and a lot of different things, but as much as you can remove what you feel or anything personal and always keep it about the dogs, that is the goal. And the fact remains, if you collaborate, more lives will be saved. More good will come from that if you collaborate. And so if you have a bad experience, don't walk away. Just go somewhere else.
Right.
Work with others. Learn about others. And yeah, working together is super important.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's an emotional topic. It's an emotional cause. It's heart-wrenching at times. It will, you know, really try you. So I think when Rebecca is saying, you know, just keep your personality out of it and make it about the dogs, yeah, it's only to help you move further along and helping the cause, because it is something that's emotional and we take it home with us. But we can't alienate other human beings or work against them, because then we're hurting the dogs. So even though you loved animals and grew up with them and stuff, did you have an aha moment where you said, I need to stand up for pits. I'm starting a foundation.
The aha moment for me was when a dog named Angel came into my life and essentially changed the trajectory of it. It was through knowing and loving Angel that I became aware of the fear-based ignorance and how wrongly vilified these dogs are and discriminated against. And when I learned it, and I really dove deep into it because I really wanted to be educated, you know? And so when I learned what I learned, doing nothing was not an option for me. I just knew that I had to do something. So initially, it was not to become a foundation at all. I did not want to do that. Becoming a foundation is an enormous responsibility and an enormous amount of work. And I had a whole other career going on. So what I chose to do was use my stand-up and get some of my friends. And I started producing live events, and I started them in Hollywood, and I was not a nonprofit. So the venue would literally write a check directly to whatever group, you know, was benefiting. It would be anywhere from $10,000 to, you know, $20,000 these groups would get. And I did that for a long time, for a few years. And then I decided to march on Washington. And in order to raise funds to march on Washington, because it is not free to organize a march, it is extremely expensive, and to rally at the Capitol and stuff, that takes money. And in order to raise funds, I needed to become a nonprofit so it could be tax deductible donations. So I believe it was in 2013, I hired an attorney and She ended up donating her services. She was an amazing woman and filled out all of the paperwork, which is extensive. And then I think in 2014, we got recognized as the Stanford Pitts Foundation. And that's when we marched. So that's how we became a foundation. But I started the work long before, you know, doing Stanford Pitts events. And even years before that, I was always like helping dogs, or if I found a stray, you know, finding a fault, like doing the stuff long before, you know, doing Stanford Pitts events.
And Angel was with you, right? I have a t-shirt actually, that's the Pibble March t-shirt. It's a great t-shirt with the writing on it. And I think I bought it online, and because I couldn't go, and it just helped. The funds went, you know, t-shirt sales. So you guys really find all these different ways to help people feel like they're contributing, even if they can't be there in person.
Yeah. Selling those t-shirts single-handedly funded the entire march. I mean, we had a few donors and we had a few sponsors for sure, but those t-shirts were unbelievable. And we sold them for a long time, and we were able to do the march because of it. And it helped launch the foundation. It was truly incredible. And I didn't really have a presence on social media at all. We were, you know, actually friends of mine about 6 months before the march were like, why are you not on Instagram? And I was like, what is Instagram? I didn't even know. But yeah, it's the power of telling the truth. You know, you tell the truth and people will come.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And was Angel with you at that time?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Angel marched on Washington and even made it to go back the year after, which was amazing. Then she passed in 2016.
Okay.
But yeah, and she wasn't expected to. They only gave her like 6 months. She had systemic mast cell cancer, and she made it 3.5 years longer, which is amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And can I ask you how she was saved? How did you meet Angel?
I had lost my other dog, and it was tragic. He died of kidney failure. His name is Walter. He was like this big white Dogo Argentino, and he was from the Lancaster shelter, and he was only 4 years old and got really sick and died. And I was devastated. And, but I decided I was going to foster. I would never have another dog again, but I would just foster. And I was on Pet Finder, and I found this one dog, and I contacted this tiny little rescue I'd never heard of. And he had been adopted, but they said, told me about this other dog they had named Angel, who was red listed. She was from South LA, and she'd had a TPLO surgery, and she needed somewhere to rest and stuff and heal. And I said, okay. And so I started fostering her. And then like 3 weeks later, I was like, I love her so much. I could not imagine my life without her. Oh. I know. And even though it was insane too, it's a long story and a typical one, sadly, but she needed her other knee done, and they did not provide the funds when they said they would. And it was like, oh my, and I just spent all this money on my other dog with kidney failure. And that's why I feel for people when they struggle financially. Luckily nowadays you can do GoFundMes and you have social media to raise money. Back then, you know, you didn't. And I remember
it was still the early days, right?
Yes. Yeah. I would do live events. I did a live stand-up show, and all my friends came, and we raised money to help get her knee done. But, and then that was the beginning of a long life-changing journey.
Yes. And the advocacy for spay and neuter, which I find to be so important because it's at the core of preventing future dog homelessness, possibly ending the current dog homelessness we have in this country, so we can focus on all the ones that have already been born that need us to take care of them and get them out of the shelters every day. So talk to us about the spay neuter events and why that is a big message for Stand Up for Pitts Foundation. How does one collaborate with you, or how do shelters take part in them? All of that good stuff for the spay and neuter events.
Yeah. What's really crazy is like our mission was basically advocating and saving lives of pit bull type dogs. And in our minds, it was like frontline rescue efforts, you know, providing funds and resources to try to help save lives and whatnot, however we could. And after Angel passed away in April, I had become more educated on the spay neuter need and how one unaltered female and her offspring over a 6 year period can create up to an estimated 67,000 dogs. I just kept thinking, wow, you know, there's 85% of dogs in U.S. shelters are labeled pit bull type dogs. So if the shelters are hemorrhaging with all of these kind of dogs that I'm fighting so hard to save, why don't I focus on solution. I mean, I'm not focusing on rescuing and frontline rescue efforts either, but focusing on the solution. So in memory of Angel, I started Spay Neuter Angel Day. It's a national pit bull type dog spay neuter initiative. I believe it's the only one in the United States. I have never heard that there's another pit bull type dog specific spay neuter program. There's spay neuter.
I haven't either.
Yeah. And it's astonishing to me. And I've said, if it exists, if there's another program that's doing this, please let me know. We'll collaborate. And no one has ever reached out saying we're only spaying and neutering pit bull type dogs. And it's a tragic to me because that is predominantly what is dying in our shelters. Right. And on top of that, all of the things they have to go through, you know, the plight of the pit bulls is so horrific. So it's like, why are we not focusing on this? So the first year that Angel passed, I think we did like 22 cities, or we did 12 cities across the country. And then we did the following year, like 22 and 48, and it keeps growing every single year. Wow. And how we do it is, if you run a spay neuter clinic in any city in the country, or you run a clinic, or you run a spay neuter mobile, whatever, like a low cost spay neuter mobile unit, or you're a rescue and you host clinics, contact us and tell us how many pit bull type dogs you can do, and tell us the cost involved, and we will figure it into our budget and we'll fund it. And that's what we have been doing. And we have spay and neutered a lot of pit bull type dogs around the country, and predominantly in underserved communities, which is amazing because they just don't have the resources. So we have gotten a lot of dogs fixed that would have otherwise never had a chance. And in doing so, we've literally saved millions of pit bulls.
Wow. And just to clarify for our listeners, so the pit bulls that you spay and neuter are not necessarily the ones sitting in the shelters. They are their families' pets, right? Families who may not be able to afford or have access to spay and neuter, or who recently adopted and need their dog spay and neutered.
Exactly. Yeah. It's for communities that really struggle in that regard. And they don't have, you know, a lot of them aren't online. They don't know that they should be spaying and neutering. They don't have the funds to do that. They can't get there. They don't have a car. You know, some of these groups will go pick them up. Like, it's really amazing and super effective, because a lot of times these kind of communities have this really huge homeless dog problem. So it's been really rewarding in that sense. But there's also, you know, we have done, for example, we just did 49 dogs at a rural shelter in Louisiana. And these dogs are the Vermilion Shelter, it's called, very rural, out in the middle of nowhere. And we, in an effort to help inspire people to adopt these dogs or rescues to step up, we fixed them all, and we just paid for all their heartworm. So yeah, I mean, we'll do that too. So it's not just specific to pet owners. We have done shelter dogs. Bark Nation is a group that we support. They took on 108 dog fighting survivors recently. You know, we just gave them $20,000 to help those dogs with their treatments and, you know, to become healthy. But they're also going to participate this year in Spay Neuter Angel Day. So the dogs they have at their facility will get fixed as well. So it's just, we're open. Like, whoever wants to spay and neuter pit bull type dogs. There's been a couple wiener dogs that have gotten through somehow.
That's funny.
It is funny. But yeah, if anyone wants to participate, just contact us and we'll make it happen.
Okay. So you hear that, people. If you have a question, if you wonder, don't be afraid to ask. I mean, if something, you know, I am sure that someone at Stand Up for Pets Foundation is going to direct you in the right direction. They're going to send you to the right place if they're not doing it themselves. So do not be afraid to ask. I love asking questions. That's just the only way we're going to find solutions and know who and where and how to work together. I want to tackle a couple of topics that, you know, are a little bit heavier in the dog rescue world, but they're really important to me. And I know they are to you, which is why I want to bring them up. And that's what you mentioned earlier, which was BSL and dog fighting. When I looked on your website, and you have such a beautifully informative website, by the way, you have a place where there's resources. I mean, there's nothing that you guys cannot find some sort of information for on their website. So if anything, I will also have, you know, that link and the show notes for this podcast episode, because it really is about just getting informed. Tell us why Stand Up for Pits calls it America's dirty little secret when it comes to dog fighting.
Because it is. I mean, dog fighting is happening. First and foremost, it's happening. And it is happening everywhere. It is men, women, white, black, rich, poor, rural, city, young people. It is everyone, all ethnicities, all tax brackets. It's happening. And if you don't think that it is, you're wrong. It didn't end when Michael Vick got caught. It just was a light was shined on it for a second, but it is going on nonstop, sadly, everywhere. And there are no resources. And it is not taken seriously enough on a federal and state and local level. There's no animal cruelty task force in the county of Los Angeles, which is 10.1 million people. There's just no resources, you know? It's sadly, it's like looked at as like, it's a low level issue, but the reality is where there's dog fighting, there's always other crime. There's domestic violence, child abuse, illegal gambling, illegal weapons, drugs, the list goes on and on. So if instead of ignoring the dogfighting epidemic and not putting resources and effort into ending the dogfighting epidemic, we could solve a lot of other crimes and make communities safer for humans and pets if it was more focused on. I mean, follow the end of the dog chain and there you go. There's your problem. It's just not society. Our society sees it as an animal welfare issue, if it even exists, but oh, that's not in my neighborhood. That's happening in the deep woods or that's happening only in the cities. No, no, no. Your neighbor could be attending, could be training, could be breeding, could be anything. People need to be aware of what is going on around them. And if they see something, they have to do something. Now, sadly, the bottom line is a lot of times there's no education for our law enforcement. So our law enforcement don't necessarily know what they're looking for. People don't know what they're looking for. So it's kind of like blind leading the blind. And the biggest busts that have ever happened, to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, and I'm always open to being corrected and learning, but to my knowledge, the biggest busts that have ever happened have always been because of an anonymous tip, because a neighbor or a friend or a cousin or a sister or a girlfriend said, hey, I heard about this thing, or I saw this, blah, 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 or I know that my uncle is doing this, and that led to busts. So I just implore everybody, stop ignoring it. It's real. The people that are doing it are not just exclusively dangerous to animals. They will cut you. They will hurt you. They will burn your shit to the ground. They're big into arson. And it needs to be taken very serious. And if you suspect something is happening, you need to say something or do something. I know it's scary. It can be. But that is the only way. You know, dogfighting is a very cowardly act. It's very underground. It's very dark and underground and hidden. And the main way of getting these people is by reporting it and staying diligent in that report. And also, since we're on the subject, I need to say this.
Please.
Everyone listen to this. If you see that there is dogfighting going on Instagram or Facebook or any social media, please do not report the page. Please do not share that and put it on blast and bitch them out and blah, 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 and raise awareness to it. Just take note of the page, try to gather as much information about that page and about the people running it. Find the location, try to find any information that you can about it, and then report it quietly. Report it. Number one, you don't know if there's already an investigation happening on that. Number two, you don't want to tip those people off so that they can then move the evidence, which is the dogs, or shut the page down and open up another alias.
Right.
And number three, if you continue to badger the cops or, you know, harass investigators, first know this. Number one, there's so many limited resources. There's hardly any investigators to begin with. Number two, the cops half the time don't even know what to look for or how to prove it, or it's very hard to get warrants and prosecutions on these guys, people that are, you know, fighting dogs. So if you call and they don't give you an update, it doesn't mean that they're not doing anything. It could, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. And, you know, shouldn't just assume that they're crooked and they're involved. And could they be? Yes. I mean, nothing surprises me, but for the most part, just understand that when encountering or witnessing or coming across dogfighting on social media, you have got to handle it in a way that is not going to make those people run away with those dogs, because that might be the only opportunity those dogs have. So So be smart about it, please. I get tagged and sent stuff all the time about these dog fighting things online. And it's like, please, please just report it. Quietly find out the information and find out where it's located and report it to the proper municipality wherever you feel it's happening. If it's happening internationally, that's harder. It still can be sent to HSUS because they're an international organization. They can investigate international, but just do your due diligence, become an investigator yourself, be careful, be smart, be quiet, and do report it the way that it should be reported. I hope that makes sense.
It totally does. And anonymity, I know that people don't report things because you're scared, but you can be anonymous. There are anonymous tip lines, there's hotlines. And nowadays, all you have to do is do a search on the internet and you'll find where you need to go to do things. So I just think, again, I'll say it, there's no excuse not to help, to make a difference, to press some buttons on a device because we all have them. And to your point, Rebecca, I will say, you know, I was on a journey prior to the podcast of documenting my travels around the country with my own dogs. And then it became a short documentary series based on dog rescue. And one of the things we found in the South was one of the ladies who was giving us, you know, her story about her rescued dog took us to a house and we drove around the block. And she said, that is a dog fighting house. And this house looked like it was just a nice little house in a neighborhood. The thing that gave it away was that there were 7 dogs in outside kennels and they were all pit bulls in the yard.
Mm-hmm. And that's how a lot of times they keep them. They're very much in close proximity to one another. You know, they're weighted down with usually like 11-pound chains, very heavy duty 4-ply collars that are very thick. And, you know, they'll be sometimes attached to a barrel or a hot box, like a square wood box.
We saw that.
Yeah. And sometimes nothing. But if you see that, that's not okay. So be smart, be careful, and be diligent. Do something, take action, but do it the right way. Because the very last thing you want is to come back there the next day and the dogs are missing. You have to be smart. If I didn't, if I didn't take the time to be educated about it, I wouldn't know what to do.
Right. So, me neither.
Yeah. It's just like the same thing I talk about with buying dogs. Like I'm very adamant about never, ever, ever buying dogs, you know, adopt. And it's not just a phrase, adopt, don't shop. I mean, when I was 20 years old, I got married at 20 years old, lived in Chicago, and my ex-husband was from England, and he really wanted a German Shepherd, an Alsatian, they call him. And, you know, that's 31 years ago. Yes, I'm 51. Well, I will be 51. Almost 31 years ago, you know, and there was no internet, there was no education. And I wasn't raised with a good example of, you know, my parents weren't good examples of how to raise animals or how animals should be treated. And my husband wanted this dog and he went into a pet store and bought it. And I remember, you know, even then, even though I didn't know anything, I didn't know better at all. And I loved that dog. I loved her until the day she died. I had her for 11 and a half years. But I knew the moment I became educated about never buying dogs and why, I became a very outspoken person about it. As outspoken as I am, I also understand that sometimes people just don't know.
Correct.
That's right, right. Our job is to educate. Our job is to tell them and relate to them and go, you know, there was a time where I didn't know what you don't know, but I'm telling you the truth now. Now that you know, you got to run with it. You can't pretend you don't know.
Exactly. You know, I'm like wiggling my fingers because I was in those shoes too. And I've shared that part of my story on the podcast. But again, that was 20 years ago when I bought a dog, my first dog ever, because I didn't know that you weren't supposed to. Mm-hmm. But then you meet other parents, I like to call them dog parents. Mm-hmm. I don't say pet owners. And I go, hey, where'd you get your dog? Where'd you get your dog? And people would start to tell you, oh, I adopted her. And I'm like, adopted? What does that even mean? Mm-hmm. The light bulb went off.
Yep.
You can't pretend not to know once you know. So I always implore to our listeners, please, it's not that I'm trying to like, beat it over the head. It's more like, let me just share information with you. And hopefully you'll share it with someone else so that their light bulb goes off.
Exactly. And that's how I'm very passionate about it because, you know, I do understand not knowing, but once enlightened, there is no excuses. You cannot, if you know the truth, you know, you cannot to turn away is another step of dumb that I can't understand. It's like, no, you know that you know what's right, then you do it.
It's 2022.
That's exactly it. And it's like, you know, and I still understand even in 2022, there's a lot of people that don't still don't, you know, like you said, cultural things and don't have access to social media or not on it or access to a computer at all. So I understand that that still can exist, that it does, but the majority of people who are buying dogs absolutely know that they should not be buying dogs.
Oh yes. I think so.
And if they say otherwise, I just don't buy it. I do not buy it.
And just to remind us is that there was a time when we saw a lot more pet stores, and that's gone away in many, many states. You won't find pet stores.
Yeah.
So I do believe that if we got there eventually within a 20-year span, that we can get there when it comes to dog fighting or BSL, which we're going to talk about, which stands for breed specific legislation. And I'm going to let Rebecca tell us a little bit more about why that's wrong and why we can change it. We have to stop feeling helpless or leaving it up to the next guy or, you know, that doesn't happen in my neighborhood, so I'm just going to pretend like it doesn't happen here and move on. Like, we can't afford that anymore if we want our society to look better and be better as we get older.
Yeah. I mean, and I agree with you. I mean, we all have the power to make change. We do. You know, I organized the Pibble March, never having organized or attended a march before in my life. I did it by myself from a one-bedroom apartment with no money and no resources. I just dedicated a year of my life to doing it. And I did it because I'm sickened and outraged, like most of all of us feel. You know, I was sickened and outraged by what these dogs are up against, and breed specific legislation is one of those things. And BSL is breed specific legislation, and it's discrimination enshrined in law. It basically says that there's different levels of it, and pit bull type dogs are not the only dogs that are under the umbrella of BSL.
Oh, are there other breeds?
Oh, sure. Rottweilers, German Shepherds, Dobermans, Mastiffs. There's all different, but there's also different levels of BSL. So in certain counties, a dog under BSL, it may only require the dog wear a muzzle when being walked. Or in another area, it can be as severe as if they see you walking a pit bull type dog, they can seize it. They can take it. You can't live in that, you know, county if you have a pit bull type dog. And that is very PG County. There is a shelter in PG County, Maryland, that is filled with pit bulls, and they cannot be adopted out to any member of the public. They can only be pulled by rescues and then adopted outside of that area because of breed specific legislation. And you can find that, that page of those dogs. I've been really trying to raise awareness about them. They're called PG Pitties on Instagram. And the
how did they get there? If they're not allowed to be adopted in that area, how did they get to that area to be held by this shelter? Is it?
Yeah, if they're probably relinquished strays. Mm. I mean, that's a good question. I'll ask the woman who runs the page. But probably how all dogs get to shelters in a way, you know, relinquished and backyard breeding and strays and who knows, or maybe other shelters in the area. I'm guessing, but other shelters in the area might be full. So then they go to that one.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's a very good question. And I will be sure to ask her. She's pretty responsive on her page. So anyone can ask her those questions, but it's infuriating. And they keep, I think it's coming up to be revoted on again. And, you know, the Stand Up for Pits Foundation is not, we're not lobbyists. We don't get involved in that side of things. Mm-hmm. It's just not what we do, but we can encourage people to really research who they're voting for, because it is those city councilmen, those people are making those decisions. And any member, you know, any city councilman, any government or official or lawmaker who makes the decision against, you know, to support discrimination against a pit bull type dog, you don't want them.
You don't even want them on your council. You shouldn't be voting for people who don't like or understand or appreciate these loving beings on your council, because they're speaking up for an entire county at a time.
Exactly. So, you know, there's like Miami-Dade and Denver just had an overturned thing, but with that, they overturned BSL. Denver was really bad too, but there's still rules that come with it. Like you have to, you know, get certain insurances, or you have to follow certain guidelines. And you know what, to be honest, I'm totally for that. I think the more you can hold a dog parent, as you call them, accountable, mm-hmm. the better off society will be. You know, you don't want stupidity leading to an incident that it's your fault, but the dog's going to get blamed. So I think whatever can be implemented to keep the dogs safe and those around them safe, the better. But BSL is absolute bullshit. And when I was marching on Washington in 2000, I believe it was in 2014, people can Google it. There was a Huffington Post article, and I'm in it. And I remember they at the White House made an official statement saying that breed specific legislation, because pit bull type dogs are not allowed on active duty military bases in the United States. So if you want to serve our country, you have to give up your dog, essentially. And a lot of the military, there was a petition going around and it had over 30,000 signatures on it. So the White House had to respond. It was from the US military. And the White House made an official statement saying that breed specific legislation is ineffective and it is discrimination enshrined in law and not fair. Yet nothing has happened on a federal level. If it could, I don't even know, but it should.
But it should.
It should.
And I think it could. I just think not enough of us are speaking up loudly enough. And those of us that are speaking up, we just need more support. We need more people to believe that your voice matters and that you can make a difference, even by going to your small city council elections. No vote is too much. You know what I mean? We need you. And I'm always begging for that, because I think it took me a long time to feel like my voice mattered, like I was making a difference. But when I saw the outcome of the littlest things, like family and friends who always bought dogs and started rescuing and adopting, I was like, oh my gosh, it's working. So
good for you. Yes.
One dog at a time, even in your own little circle of the world, it makes a big difference, right?
Mm-hmm. And like, if you have a pit bull type dog, I mean, look, I have two right now. They're maniacs. They are absolutely.
We're going to talk about them, Sally and Todd. For anyone who doesn't already follow them on Instagram, you must.
They bring me to my knees a lot of times, peeing on the couch for no reason. And I'm talking about you guys. They're looking at me like, so they're, by the way, they're not puppies. They're like 7 and 8. They should not be peeing on couches.
Right.
They're out of their minds. Yeah, they're one step closer to getting thrown in an Uber and sent right back to the big house. They are so cute. But I was going to say, like, if you have a pit bull type dog, like, you know, Angel was like beyond. She was like next level. I mean, she's every quality she has is the exact opposite of me. Like, you know, she just loved everyone and was like, you know, so sweet and just so like zen-like. And I brought her everywhere with me. There was nowhere that I went that Angel wasn't with me for the entire 8 years I had her. I mean, we traveled on airplanes. You can't do that anymore. They've banned them. But we traveled for 5 years all over the United States. And she, you know, I had kissing booths set up at all of the events that I did. And people lined up for, you know, an hour before the show just to see Angel, just to kiss Angel for $1. And she was you never saw me without seeing her, and vice versa. She became part of just my life and everything that I did. And by her being with me everywhere, she changed so many lives. She inspired so many people and she changed people's opinions. You know, people that would meet her that were terrified of pit bull type dogs. It was just really magical to see. So I'm so lucky I got that opportunity. And I encourage other people, if you have that magical unicorn, if you're lucky enough to have one, you know, share them, you know, encourage other people. Yeah, you can pet her or you can pet them. You know, sometimes that's all it takes for someone to go, oh, I thought these were all mean. That's what the news says. No, you know what I mean? The simple thing like that, you know, those things help too. We don't always have to be, it's important to run our mouths, but a lot of times these dogs can be the best teachers without ever saying a word.
Yes, just being, they're like walking ads. You know, I have a 5-year-old son, and when he was born, I already had 3 of the 5 pitties, and he's only known life with them. So what I've always said is teach your children to be dog friendly, to treat dogs with respect, and to know boundaries, because these dogs will be so loving and so beautiful with children. And when we walk the park and my son walks with them, I've seen other families give us the stink guy for mm-hmm. a second. Mm-hmm. And then they see that we have a little kid with the dogs and they go, oh, so I guess those dogs are safe. You know, you see the whole story playing in their minds. And I purposefully try to get those families with other children to say hello to my dogs.
Good. There's power in that. There is power in that. I mean, there was no greater teacher or ambassador or advocate for pit bull type dogs other than Angel. I mean, all I did and all I continue to do is what she taught me, but it was who she was that made people go, oh, I see and feel about them differently. And she never said one word. She was just born inherently good, lived inherently good. And that was enough. So I encourage people. I mean, if you have maniacs like Todd Humps, everyone, you know, that's not...
And you take Sally and Todd to your events, right? I saw them at this comedy club in Melrose.
I do. And I got to keep a tight leash on them because especially if, by the way, the live events, just so you know, the live events are amazing, as you know, and mm-hmm. in Hollywood, we do a red carpet and, you know, a lot of people come and I open it up to everyone, anyone who wants to come and do the red carpet, they can do the red carpet. But it is a human only event. It's not a dog show or a dog.
Right,
show.
Right.
So if you do come to, you know, a Stand Up for Pits event, please respect the event and the dogs that are there. Don't bring your dog. These are human only events. Right. The only dogs that can be there are dogs that are approved to be there through my organization. And Sally and Todd have every right to be there.
Well, yeah, I would say so.
Did you see them on the on the carpet?
I did, you know, because remember, without them and without their mom, there is no comedy club show. So we have to advocate for the dogs. And we actually, it's an opportunity for all of us to not take our dogs and go say hi to Sally and Todd. So
bingo. That's exactly what it is. The events are amazing. It's a great time to just come and support the dogs and support the cause without having to, you know, to bring, it's not a pack walk or anything. You just get to come and enjoy yourself.
What are some other things you would like to share with us that are super important for this cause?
I know that most of the people that get involved in animal welfare and, you know, want to help, they do it for the right reasons. You know what I mean? They go into it. The majority of people are very good people and good-hearted people, and they feel conviction and compassion and they want to make change. And I find that inspiring always. But I also think it's really important to tell people to understand that with it, I think I mentioned earlier, it is run by humans and it will become frustrating and it will become emotionally taxing. And that compassion fatigue is a very, very real thing. And it is extremely difficult to take care of yourself and to draw boundaries when you're in it, you know? And if you choose to run an organization and make it your job, like a real job, and you are getting a paycheck to run that organization to help save lives, then it needs to be treated as such a job. And you have to do things. You have to have an accountant and attorneys, and you have to run a website, and you have to be functioning, and you have to be responsive, and you have to be accountable, and right. You know, because lives are at stake.
Absolutely.
No matter what capacity you're doing it in, volunteer, or you have a staff of 1,000 people, you're running a massive organization or a little tiny organization, just understand that it is an enormous amount of work. And if you feel that you become overwhelmed and you want to walk away, I implore people, don't. Just take a break. There's nothing wrong with some self-care. Take a night off. Take 2 days off. Take not too much, but take some time off because you got to stick with it.
Yeah, right.
But you got to don't walk away because, you know, in the past, in doing this for 12 years, I have seen so many people leave and walk away. And that's really hard. It's really hard to see. And I just feel like if people understood it going in, you know, that it is going to be painful and that it is an enormous amount of work that requires a lot of responsibility, it might be easier to navigate. So hopefully that will be helpful or inspiring or encourage people in whatever capacity they plan on doing it.
Absolutely.
Full-time job or it's volunteer or whatever.
And that really resonates with me too. I think it's really important to know ourselves and what we can and cannot do. What are our limits, our boundaries, so that we never have to give up. We just know how far we take it and how long we take it. And then we take a break and then we come back and then we take a break. And then there's other people that fill in while we're taking a break. And so there's never anyone missing. It's just that, you know, the wheel keeps spinning and turning, but we take care of ourselves so that we can always come back.
Exactly. Just don't, that's the one thing that really crushes my soul is when I see advocates walking away because they've had enough.
Yes. And don't give up. Don't lose hope because there is change being made and you can find proof of it each and every day. And I will actually point to the fact that, Rebecca, when you share posts on Instagram, when Stand Up For Pits advocates for dogs in shelters that have been there 200 days, 300 days, or have been returned twice to the shelter and people start sharing, within a week's time, I've seen these doggies get the right home. So we do make a difference en masse, and we just have to believe that if we had a rough day, we could take a breather, but we can come back because we are making a difference.
This is a marathon. This is a long journey. This is not, you know, I think save them all, that phrase, it's a cute idea, but it's not possible. If it was, it would have already happened. Right. It is. There has to be some real systemic change that has to happen. And that is back to spay and neuter. That's a solution-driven initiative that, you know, that is how you make real change. Changing people's minds, changing the social consciousness, changing the way we talk about and see, you know, changing the way people talk about pit bull type dogs and see them. That's what's going to create the long-term change. So in doing that, that takes time. And in that long journey, you're going to come across a lot of things that are going to discourage you and a lot of people that are going to disappoint you, but keep going.
So tell us, Rekha, on that note, where can our listeners find and follow Stand Up For Pits and support your mission? What are the ways that people can support Stand Up For Pits?
Oh, man. Well, you can support however you're able. And that means, look, if you can donate funds, great. If you can't, that's okay, because there's so much that you can do outside of just donating funds. When we share dogs that need to be seen, you know, share them. You know, take 1 second to hit, you know, reshare. So many dogs get saved that way. It's a wonderful way to use social media in a positive way. You can buy our merchandise. We have a little online store and you can go to standupforpits.us and find the store. You know, we get like 40% of each sale. I think the other, you know, the company that makes it takes like 50 or 60% or whatever, but we get a portion of that. So that helps. Come to a Stand Up For Pits event. If we come to your city, that's a fun way to support and do exactly what you've done, what you said you've done. Talk to your friends, your family, educate, advocate. If you have a pit bull type dog, let them be the advocate, you know, let them be breed ambassadors and show people how kind and inherently good they are. That is supporting Stand Up For Pits because that's our mission. So support however you can. And if you're not local and you want to do more, find a shelter in your area and go walk the dogs once a week or do a donation drive and collect items for your shelter. Or there's just, you can always do something, become a foster, transport a dog that needs help. You know, if you see a neighbor who doesn't have their dog fixed, offer to research a place, a low-cost clinic in the area. Take them to go get the dog fixed. You know, there's always something that people can do.
Yes, absolutely. And I encourage you all to follow. Oh, give us the Instagram. Is there a Facebook page as well?
Yeah. So Instagram is Stand Up For Pits Foundation. It's all spelled out. And then Twitter is SUFP Foundation on Twitter. And then Facebook is Stand Up For Pits Foundation as well. And our website is standupforpits.us.
Great. And I will have all those live links in the show notes for this episode so anyone can easily click and connect with Stand Up for Pitts Foundation. Our listeners should also know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any person or organization on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America. Thank you, Rebecca. This has been such an enlightening and inspiring conversation, despite the tough topics, but you always speak from the heart and with the truth, and I love that so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all you do. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, and for all those inherently good dogs, which I know you always call them, please, let's speak up, let's take action, let's never give up, because they deserve to be loved and treated with respect and honored each and every day of their lives. So there you have it, my friends. What an absolute inspiration to speak to someone who is so passionate and informed on the real issues at hand. And she tells it like it is. Thank you for listening to our conversation, as we want to make you a part of the conversation. The Stand Up for Pitts Foundation has inspired others to do live events, organize marches, start petitions, place stray and found dogs on their own, report abusers and dog fighters, do fundraisers, and be heard. By doing these things, we create safer and more humane communities for humans and pets. You can find this and a plethora of information to help guide you in the cause at the Stand Up for Pitts Foundation website. And if she comes to your city to do stand up, trust me, you don't want to miss it. Go to a show. I will now leave you with a quote from our very special guest. Abuse and discrimination is wrong. Whether the abused or discriminated has two legs or four, it is wrong. We are all in this together. This is everyone's problem, and we have the power to change it. Rebecca Corey. Thank you for joining me for this episode. Please press subscribe on our podcast channel and tell all your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes. The Canine Condition. Come, sit, stay.